hates them.
What's the name?
The House Rules Committee will come to order, and we have a couple people who are here that need to testify and get on with it, so we're going to open up our work session on 3254. No, yours is...
Mr. Chair, 2352.
2352, thank you very much. 2352, to take some testimony from our distinguished guests here, and then we're going to move on. So we're opening a work session on 2352. Right. And we'll go fairly quick. And these are invited people to let us know about an amendment that was made and some other information, and then we're going to probably carry this work session over to Monday because we're not having a Friday meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent District 43, Inner North and Northeast Portland, the soul of Portland. And I'm here in support of House Bill 2352, and I believe you have the Dash 2 amendments for your consideration. And so I wanted to just kind of once again let you all remind you about what this bill does. And in the state of Iowa, Connecticut, and Wisconsin, they have come to find that a useful tool for addressing minority overrepresentation in the criminal justice system is the concept of racial impact statements. And all this says is that if we're going to pass a bill, there may be some unintended consequences of what the bill might do. And so if we're concerned about minority overrepresentation, this would give us the numbers of who is likely to be impacted by it so that we can go in eyes wide open to making the decision. If you can't make the decision, it just makes sure that we know what that decision ramifications might be. And it's just another useful tool similar to a fiscal impact statement when we're making our decisions on legislation. And does the committee administrator probably be a better person to describe the Dash 2s if you want to do that? Or Commissioner Vakian can go next if you like.
Okay, I'll let him go. Let me talk about it more. We'll talk about that, too.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much. I'm Brad Avakian, Commissioner of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. I appreciate the invitation to testify on House Bill 2352 today. And with your indulgence for a couple minutes, Mr. Chair, I thought it might be good to try and explain to the committee why it is that the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor was requested to come talk about this bill in particular. As you know, the Bureau of Labor is the chief civil rights law enforcement agency for the state of Oregon. We are charged with protecting people from discrimination based on race, religion, gender, disability, age, sexual orientation, and a host of other categories, not only on the job, but also investigate and enforce all of those protected class cases with state and federal housing discrimination and also discrimination in public accommodation. Now, public accommodation means discrimination in public places such as a theater or a restaurant or a tavern, anything of that sort, but also with respect to access to public services, and the fair application of laws and rules in the state of Oregon. Something unique to the Bureau as well is that we enforce those laws against private entities like companies and nonprofits and others, but also we are charged with enforcing it against public bodies, state and local governments. A very good example of that was in the 2007 session when the legislature asked the Bureau to create a statewide diversity plan for hiring apprentices in state jobs. So we have this unique relationship with enforcement and education of state agencies. To give you an idea of the scope of our civil rights enforcement, our civil rights division gets about 32,000 phone calls per year from individuals asking questions about their civil rights. We also have a piece to our agency that educates state agencies and employers on civil rights and other employment matters. We get an additional 20,000 to 25,000 phone calls a year from those sources asking questions about civil rights. We have within the Bureau investigators, case presenters, which you can think of as a prosecutor, and judges, which process civil rights complaints, and we process about 2,200 complaints a year. And then lastly, we understand from the EEOC, our federal counterpart, that Oregon's rate of finding discrimination during its investigations, meaning actually proving the case, is one of the highest rates of any state or federal jurisdiction in the country. Now, because of our obligation to the state to secure those civil rights, bills like House Bill 2352 are of great interest to the Civil Rights Division. There's no question in our state, like other states, that minorities are incarcerated at a higher rate relative to their population than others. It's a historic and it's a chronic problem, and it's a problem that we have not found a definitive answer as to why it exists. Now, I know that this body is going to have to struggle with whether or not there's a fiscal impact to the bill, but from our perspective of securing individual civil rights, what we see this bill doing is that the bill requires the government to consider how its actions through laws and rules might or might not contribute to the historic and chronic problem that I described. And because of that, the Bureau of Labor and the Civil Rights Division sees this as a positive step in both the education and the enforcement of civil rights in this state, and we're supportive of the effort.
Any questions for either of these witnesses? Seeing none. Oh, yes. Would you like to continue?
No, I was just, if I might, Mr. Chair,
sure.
To as long as you have the work session open, it might be, since I know you're not ready to move the bill at this point, but you might want to consider moving the Dash 2 amendments in, having the discussion about what they do so that it will be ready for consideration if you decide to do so in the future.
And I think we have one more witness, so we're going to hold off that and do the other one, but I will come back to that, and we will have that conversation.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking us first. Appreciate that.
So I'm going to leave that open because I haven't other person to testify, and we are going to go through and probably do the twos. But I want to open a work session at the same time on House Bill 3254. As you remember, this one was carried over from our last meeting. It has to do, and we can have an explanation by our administrator. I think this bill is ready to go, so I just want to take care to do it. So we'll give you an explanation. And
thank you, Chair Roblin. Members of the committee, House Bill 3254 allows radio and data communication districts to be formed as special districts within all or part of one or more counties. Authorizes districts to acquire, maintain, and operate voice and data communication systems for use by public safety agencies within their boundaries. Authorize the district to contract with the United States for acquisition and operation of radio and data communication facilities and related property. And takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. At the previous meeting, a number of issues were discussed, including the historical background on emergency service communication systems in Morrow and Umatilla County, the lack of any mechanism in current law to create radio and data communication districts as special districts, the relationship to OWN, and the potential cost savings to states and counties.
So it had a subsequent referral, but the other one did.
No, this one has a subsequent referral.
So we didn't get it taken off. Okay. I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3254 to the floor with the subsequent referral of the Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 3254 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? We'll hope this goes to Natural Resources, right? At Ways and Means. any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Gerard?
Excuse.
Gelser?
Aye.
Rev. Jensen?
Aye.
Rev. Nolan?
Excuse.
Rev. Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin.
Aye. Motion passes, and it's on its way. So thank you for those that came all this way. I think it's a great bill. We'll hopefully it'll go off to Representative Jensen's Ways and Means. Okay. You're welcome. So now we're going to get back on our regular schedule. So we're going to open a public hearing. Let's see if we've got these others down. On HJR 50. Well, that's right. Explanation of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Joint Resolution 50 urges Oregon's business community, individual investors, and state investment managers to determine if they have holdings in foreign companies that have substantial interest in the Islamic Republic of Iran, and if so, to provide prudent and expedient ways to divest of those holdings. Urges the state treasurer to discourage investments with companies doing business with Iran. Since 1992, Congress has passed some 20 bills and resolutions sanctioning and condemning the Iranian government for its support of terrorism and its nuclear weapons pursuits. In 1995, President Clinton issued an executive order banning all U.S. trade with some minor exceptions and investments in Iran. Recently, the U.S. Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, told Congress that the Obama administration would work with lawmakers to impose crippling, and that's quote, word, sanctions against Iran. In 2007, at least two U.S. states, California and Florida, enacted Iran divestment legislation. A number of additional states considered Iran divestment legislation in 2007 and 2008, but it is unclear whether such legislation has been adopted.
Okay, with that, Representative Thatcher.
Okay, thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Today I bring you House Joint Resolution 50. Measure's pretty cut and dry. It basically says Iran's government is dangerous because it harms its own people and threatens the U.S., and we shouldn't be investing there. Specifically, HJR 50 calls for Oregonians to divest their investment holdings in Iran and the companies that do business there. The resolution encourages Oregon private businesses and our state government entities to cancel out Iran from their investment portfolios. I worked on this last session, and in the interim, I worked with former Treasurer Randall Edwards and a couple of groups, including Christians United for Israel and the Jewish Federation of Portland. Both encouraged me to bring this proposal back this session. Oregon has a rich heritage of being on the forefront of sending messages when we think other countries should be off limits to our money. 1987, Oregon was one of the first states to adopt an anti-apartheid act against investments in South Africa. And 4 years ago, we did the same with involving Sudan over the genocide in Darfur. The latest reports on Sudan show a divestment of nearly $300 million from companies doing business there since 2005. Just as a side note, just having seen these amendments a few minutes before committee began, I noticed that it removes that track record that Oregon has proudly led the way on. I'm not sure why. However, the State Department has listed Iran as a state sponsor of terror since 1984. Once again, we need to send a strong message. This time, zero tolerance for terrorism, and I don't think the constituents in my district want their tax and retirement dollars invested in a country that wants to blow up America. The federal government has a policy banning investment of federal funds in Iran or companies controlled by their government. Oregon needs to get in line with federal policy. And as mentioned in the by the committee administrator, just yesterday, the House Financial Services Committee unanimously approved a resolution allowing state and local governments to divest public funds from companies doing business in Iran. Chairman Barney Frank expects the bill to head to the floor of the U.S. House soon. There have been about a dozen states that have enacted legislation, but there may be some constitutional questions, so the feds are looking at legislative changes to ensure states are on solid legal ground, hence the bill coming to the U.S. House. Oregon has somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 to $75 billion in its investment funds, depending on what you want to count. But according to Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund, the last figures we've seen indicate at least 87 companies with investments tied to Iran. According to testimony in the Senate a couple of weeks ago, the Treasurer's Office estimated Oregon has around $292 million invested in Iran as of now. In other states, you hear opposition from their state treasurers and pension fund managers saying that this will cost them money. But if U.S. companies or U.S.-based companies are already banned from doing business in Iran, then it shouldn't be much of a problem. Yes, the state treasurer has a fiduciary responsibility to manage Oregon investments to the best of his ability, but Iran is a very volatile country, and investing there could be very risky. There are also two Senate bills which mandate Oregon divest from Iran. This is different in that it is a resolution persuading the treasurer to make investments as he sees fit with an eye toward discouraging investment in terrorist nations like Iran, because there are other tools that the treasurer may have at his disposal. HJR encourages the treasurer to, quote, use any means available, including administrative rules and proxy voting agreements with corporate interests, to discourage investments with companies doing business with Iran. That's on page 2 of the bill. In fact, there may be things that the treasurer can do by withdrawing funds from Iran and investing them someplace else that would help actually grow the value of the state's retirement funds and other programs. The state treasurer recently sent out a letter to lawmakers objecting to the two Senate bill mandates, but there is no mention of this particular resolution in the treasurer's letter. In fact, the treasurer points out some of the other options available to him. For example, if Oregon remains a shareholder in a company, we can pressure that company to change their ways. I asked them to take a hard look at the issue of investing in Iran last year. And after that, the Oregon Investment Council actually changed its divestiture policies to recognize that, quote, according to their letter, political, social, and legal circumstances in various nations and regions of the world may impact the productivity and prudence of investments. I think we can agree that Oregon's retirees want a good rate of return on their investments, but I don't believe they would want that happening on the backs of those brutalized by this oppressive regime, especially when other business strategies are available. Yes, we want the best rate of return on our funds. We just shouldn't be investing in those who would do us harm. Simply put, free people invest in freedom.
Thank you very much. Any questions for our witness? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Are there any more people saying? Is there anyone else who is currently here who would like to speak to HJR 50? Seeing none right now, we're going to close our work session on HJR 50. Committee, it's one that I want people... Pardon?
Public hearing?
Oh. Public hearing. Sorry, public hearing, HJR 50. And committee, I just want you to look this one over. It's one that we will think about. We have comments with the treasurer. There is a bill that does something similar that the Senate has been working on. It's coming this way. We'll look at that as well, and we'll take all those things into consideration as we move forward. So thank you very much. Now we're going to open a hearing on House Bill 775. Is that the one that Riley's bill? No, I want Riley's bill.
Oh,
2667. House Bill 2667. I'm going to open a work session and just have some explanations so that.
I think you have copies of the amendment that we're going to talk about. For the record, Representative Chuck Riley, you heard from the soul of Portland a little while ago. Now you're hearing from the heart of Washington County. So the bill that we're talking about is the bill to verify residency of candidates for the legislature. This is I brought this because of a an incident in my district that cost someone a significant amount of money because this wasn't done, and we want to stop that kind of problem before it does cost. The amendment is pretty simple. It says that if the county clerk determines that the property, and there is another a little change to this
okay.
that's coming. Right now, if you look at line 6, it says the county clerk determines that the residence, and that word residence is going to be changed to the word property. And that'll be the only change that we think we need. But what this does, it has the county clerk determine if the property of someone filing for office is on the border of the district. And if they determine that that's the case, the Secretary of State's office will determine that the residence is in the district. It also says that the Legislative Administration Committee will make the mapping software available that the Secretary can use to make that determination. And it sets the first time that this goes into effect in the 2012 election. That's the extent of the amendment. This was worked out with the Secretary of State's office. They are agreeable. They're here to tell you they're agreeable. And I think that we're ready to go as soon as that amendment gets changed, and we should be ready on Monday.
And hopefully the fiscal will come at the same time, but
we think they will.
Mr. Pack.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State, we are agreeable. I can go into more detail if you want, but we've spent the last day or so working with the chief sponsor of the bill, and I think we found a way that makes this workable in terms of workload and cost as well.
So any questions for these two? Seeing, yes, Representative Berger.
I have two amendments to this.
We're talking about the dash two.
Dash twos, okay.
And these dash twos are not quite right yet.
Okay.
And so there will be a dash
there
three.
There will be a dash three with a one-word change.
And the dash ones are not under consideration?
No.
Okay.
I believe the dash one is incorporated in section three of the dash two.
Right.
And it will be incorporated into the next one.
Yeah, the dash three will have a one-word change from the dash two.
So any other questions? And I think Representative Jensen said it last time, appreciate the fact that you brought this in a case in which you were in, and I think this is a good fix, and I'm pleased that we could come to an agreement with the Secretary of State to maybe prevent this in the future. So I thank you both.
Thank you.
So we're going to move House Bill 2667 to Monday, so that we'll have it up and ready to go, and we can repost it. And if everything comes, we'll have it on a work session on Monday. So I'm going to close the work session today on 2667. We still have 2352 open. It was a work session, and I'm going to invite some invited testimony. Elizabeth Pushwa, if you would like to come forward, we would appreciate hearing from you. So again, we can do a short explanation of the dash twos.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. House Bill 2352 generally requires the completion of a racial and ethnic impact analysis and statement. I won't go over what we've heard before, but I will look at the amendment. The proposed HB 2352-2 amendment replaces the original measure but retains most provisions in substantially similar form. It substitutes the Legislative Counsel Office for the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission throughout the bill. It adds a provision allowing the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate to request racial and ethnic impact statements. the LEATs a requirement to print racial and ethnic impact statements on the ballot, but retains the requirement to print them in voters' pamphlets, substitutes the Circuit Court of Marion County for the Supreme Court as a court in which petitions may be filed seeking that required procedures be followed in preparing, filing, or certifying racial and ethnic impact statements, as a requirement for the Department of Corrections to consider the effects of rules to be adopted on the racial and ethnic composition of crime victims and persons incarcerated in department institutions, and deletes a requirement for the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision to prepare statements of racial and ethnic impact, but retains the requirement to consider the effects of rules to be adopted on the racial and ethnic impact, racial and ethnic composition of persons on parole or post-prison supervision, and adds crime victims to that particular category to match up with the other section.
I think we got that.
Good afternoon, for the record, Chair Roland, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Kushwa here, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association on the Dash 2 amendments. We want to thank Representative Shields, Jess Barton, for working with us on the Dash 2s as well. They have addressed our concerns, and the ODAA is now neutral on the bill.
Okay. Any questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you very much, Representative.
We are going to move House Bill 2352 before we take any action to and put it on the agenda as a work session on Monday when we come back. And with that, I'm going to close the work. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2352. And thank you for all that. Okay, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 775. That will have a short explanation by our administrator.
Thank you, Chair Roper, members of the committee. Senate Bill 775 modifies election law related to ballot titles for certain property tax measures voted on in an election held in May or November. It conforms the current statute to comply with a ballot measure repealing a portion of the double majority requirement that was passed by voters in 2008. Prior to 2008, the Oregon Constitution required that ballot titles for certain property tax levies could be passed only at election with at least 50% voter turnout. That is Section 11, Subsection 8 of Article 11. In 2008, voters approved H.J.R. 15 from 2007, removing the double majority requirement for property tax levies voted on in an election held in May or November. This bill amends the current statute to clarify that a notice of the double majority requirement does not need to be posted on measures voted on in May or November.
And with that, we'll invite Barry Pack to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. I think the committee administrator explained the bill pretty well. I won't repeat it. Just to mention that this bill came around through the usual sort of interim review of our election statutes, and it was suggested that for anyone casually reading the statute who wasn't familiar with the fact that ballot measure 53 didn't amend the existing section of the Constitution regarding the double majority, it added a new section to the Constitution, that they wouldn't necessarily, the reader wouldn't necessarily know that there were two sections in the Constitution that governed the double majority, since one was referenced in statute and the other wasn't. So we thought it would be a good idea to reference all of the applicable portions of the Constitution, and the bill makes no substantive change to the law.
Any questions for Mr. Peck? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, we seem to be emptying the room here.
We're doing pretty good, aren't we?
Have you noticed?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. You're still here.
Right. So, we're going to... We don't have any people in there. We're going to close our works our hearing on Senate Bill 775, and we're going to hold over a work session on 775 for Monday. We're also holding over Senate Bill 330A to Monday, and that one came at the request of the sponsor of the bill, who was not able to be here today but will be here on Monday. So just a notice that we'll be doing that, and that 2920 will be rescheduled for Monday as well. Is that the one that we took off this time? Yeah. That got inadvertently removed from today's schedule. So with that, I think that covers most of the business for the day. So I would like to let us know we're not having, we've been trying working hard to give you some time on these weekends. So Friday we are not going to have a hearing. We wouldn't have a quorum if we did have a hearing. as you saw, some of our people have already gone to their travels, and there's a couple other events that are happening that make it difficult for us to have a quorum on Friday, so we're taking Friday off. But then be ready on Monday for the rest of the session. We're probably going to be meeting our 3 days a week, and I just want to make sure that people were alerted to that fact. So,
on Tuesdays and Thursdays as well, you're saying?
Not Tuesdays and Thursdays. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, at least for a while. There may come a time when we have other days and the speaker requests it. But for right now, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, pretty much the rest of the way. So with that, we will close our Rules Committee meeting for today. And thank you all for being here. As they left.